Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. My guest today is Dr. Daphne Palmer Giannakopoulos. She's a historian, journalist, and author of The Pirate's Wife, the remarkable true story of Sarah Kidd. This is Daphne's second book. It's a compelling tale of true love, lost and stolen treasure, motherhood, and survival. And I have to say, Daphne put an extraordinary amount of research into this story. It's beautifully told, narrative, nonfiction, and makes for a really fascinating dive into pirate history from the perspective of the women behind the pirates. Daphne spent her career researching pirate history and specifically has dedicated her work to bringing the stories of the forgotten women behind the pirates, like Sarah Kidd, into the light. Daphne's writing has appeared in the New York Times, the Washington Post, Southern Living, Virginia Business, and other outlets. And she's here today to talk to us again about The Pirate's Wife, the remarkable true story of Sarah Kidd, and my guest, Daphne Palmer Giannakopoulos. Daphne Palmer Giannakopoulos, welcome, welcome.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm thrilled to talk with you. And as I just said to you, I'm now obsessed with pirates. I want to read your first book now, because The Pirate's Wife is the book we're talking about today, but it's not your first foray into writing about pirates. So tell us, I understand that you were doing a dissertation and that kind of inspired the first book. Tell us how that came about.
Yes, well, it came about because I wrote a freelance piece for the New York Times Museum Special Section in 2002, and it was about the Whippet Pirate Museum in Provincetown, Massachusetts. This is the pirate ship that crashed during a nor'easter off the shores of Cape Cod in 1717. And as I was looking at the everyday artifacts that were recovered from the pirate ship, they told me that the pirates had lives and connections on land. There was a teapot and cutlery and a shoulder blade of a pirate and a shoe and a leg bone. And I just saw the human side of these mythological men. The legend of the captain of the ship named Sam Bellamy, he had a love interest. And then that told me that pirates might have families and community links that we had never thought about. So I wrote my dissertation and turned it into this my first book, The Pirate Next Door, The Untold Story of 18th Century Pirates' Wives, Families, and Communities, based on the research that I had initiated during that New York Times piece.
And so how did you then come upon Sarah Kidd, and why was she the woman that you wanted to really dive deeply into for The Pirate's Wife?
Well, I learned about Sarah from the first book, The Pirate Next Door. There's a chapter, a brief chapter on Captain Kidd, and I just realized that she was worth a much deeper look from exploring him on a kind of a surface level. And I realized that behind Captain Kidd, who was this bigger-than-life figure, there was a very strong woman. So I decided to give her a full book.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story, and I have to say it's so well written, Daphne. It just was a dream to read, and I really enjoyed the flow of it and learned so much from it, and I wanted to like dive in and learn even more now. But so The Pirate's Wife basically reconstructs her life from 1670 to 1744, and of course William features in that too. So let's talk a little bit about William, and then we can dive deeper into his wife, Sarah. So he was Captain William Kidd, and he was quite a respectable privateer, a sea captain, as I understand, before he became a pirate. So talk to us a little bit about how that transition happened.
Yes, he was very well-respected privateer, and he was a war hero when he married Sarah. So he was a very sought-after mariner, and that's the reason that he was given a very choice privateering commission, which led to his eventual bad choices. But he was from Dundee, Scotland, and he was a man with leadership skills and could captain many a ship, and he captained many a ship before he got this big dream job as the privateer for the monarch.
People didn't see pirates necessarily to begin with as outlaws. They saw them as heroes because they benefited from some of the profits that the pirates brought back. But there was a thin line there between privateer and pirate, and maybe it's more of a political division there. Could you explain the difference?
Sure. A privateer is hired as an extra pair of hands, like he's an auxiliary to the Navy, to the British Navy, because during wartime, the government doesn't have enough ships and men. So they hire privateers who are called private men of war, and privateers own their own ship and have their own crew. And they have investors, and they have to go out and capture enemy ships, and they divide the spoils with their investors. So the investors get a portion, and then the captain and the crew get a smaller portion. The thin line that goes between privateering and piracy is that many times, once a ship is out at sea and is nowhere to be found within the law, it's very tempting to turn to piracy because pirates don't have to share. They don't have investors. So it's much more profitable for them to keep the loot.
Right, right. And so Sarah had already been married twice when she met William Kidd. Tell us about that, because they got married like a couple of days after he died, right? The second husband died, and she was, what, 21?
Yes, yes. She arrived from England to New York in 1684 at the age of 14. And within a year, at the age of 15, she was married to one of the wealthiest merchants in the colony of New York. He died tragically after 4 years, and Sarah did what any woman in the colonial period would do, because women had no standing on their own. It was all through their husband. So she remarried, and her second husband was a merchant and also a mariner. And so that was husband number two, and then he died suddenly, and 2 days later, at the age of 21, she married her third husband, which was Captain Kidd.
Yeah. And that was, it seemed like that was more of a love marriage for them, because she was married four times altogether. So I'm not sure about the first two, but certainly the fourth one seemed a bit of a marriage of convenience.
Sure, but it was a long and successful marriage. She was married to her fourth husband for 25 years.
Yeah.
And started a new family with him, too. But, yes, I think by the time she married Captain Kidd, she was 21 years old, and she had been in Manhattan since 1684. So she, in those 7 years, she had lived a lot of life, and she knew about men and marriage and love and loss. So when she met Captain Kidd, it really was a good match.
Yeah. She could read, but she could not write, which was fairly typical for that time. But you share how you came across something that she had initialed with the initials SK, and how that sparked something in you. What was the feeling that that went through you when you were looking at something that she had actually signed?
Well, it was thrilling. I was at the Massachusetts State Archives in Boston researching information on Captain Kidd when I came across this petition dated July 18th, 1699, that had her initials on it. And it was a petition that she had sent to the governor, Lord Belmont, who was the governor of New York and Massachusetts, politely demanding that he return goods, her personal belongings that his henchmen had seized from her lodgings when Captain Kidd was arrested. And seeing her, I wasn't sure. I knew that Captain Kidd had a wife. I didn't know anything more about her at that time, because this was while I was researching my dissertation. And when I found this and saw that her name was on this document, and her name was Sarah Kidd, and when I saw that she couldn't write her name, but in bold letters she had scratched very hard onto the parchment, I just remember saying in the reading room, there was no one else there except the archivist who was with me, because he had just passed me this ancient document. And I remember saying out loud, "Who are you, Sarah Kidd?"
Mm.
Because she had touched it, and the palm of her hand had been on it to sign it. And it just, all of a sudden, she was real, and I wanted to know more about her.
Yeah. Having been to many historical castles and places myself, there's something so magical about looking at those personal things that people have touched and interacted with, like, you know, like reading glasses and little handkerchiefs and something like that. So I can imagine how this sparked curiosity in you. So tell us, you did this intense research on her. How would you describe her as a woman? If you were describing her to a friend, how would you describe her?
I would describe her as gutsy and feisty. She was bold. She was courageous. She was described by a contemporary as lovely and accomplished. So there was a soft side to her, and she was very protective of her children, and she was very devoted to her husband and family. So I would find her kind of an indomitable spirit who was able to persuade and hustle, and her main goal was to survive in under unspeakable circumstances, and she endured a tremendous sorrow. So I see her as a survivor. And the thing I admire about her the most is that she had a tenacity of resilience.
Mm.
And I just found that so inspiring. I don't necessarily admire her for being an outlaw, but I do admire her for her devotion. And I think there's a lot that she can teach all of us in how we approach our own lives.
Yeah. And you mentioned, devotion to her children. She was so devoted that the treasure that William Kidd was supposed to have buried somewhere and divulged to Sarah the location of that, and only to Sarah, she kept that from everybody because she wanted to protect her children. And nobody really knows if she shared that at the end, though, right?
There's no record whatsoever about of where the treasure was, or if her children ever found it. There's no record of that.
Yeah. So he was hanged in England, William Kidd, and it seemed they made quite an example of him, because they were changing the piracy laws and trying to cut down on the piracy there. How did that impact Sarah? You know, she's this resilient woman. He's been gone. It was a 3-year trip, right? But he was only supposed to be gone 1 year. Is that correct? So if I remember,
yes.
Yeah, remembering that correctly.
Yes, his privateering voyage was, his contract was for 1 year, and it got extended to 3. So she did see him before there's quite a scene that I don't want to give away from in the book, but no. There's a good amount of time that they spent in Boston, and then how she was impacted when she learned that he was put on trial and found guilty and executed in London. She was destitute. The authorities came in and took everything, seized everything, all her material possessions, and that included slaves, because those were considered material possessions. So they took everything but her children, and they took her house and her property. So she was a social outcast, and it had to have been just devastating.
And she did try to fight for that, because, I mean, it was, her argument was, you know, they took her personal stuff and it wasn't William Kidd's stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So let's look at some myths around pirates, because we've all seen Hollywood. and I remember my dad as a kid telling me they weren't really like that. But we just love this. And my favorite ride at Disneyland, I'm going to confess, is Pirates of the Caribbean. I could go through that 100 times. I love that ride. But, I mean, it was a tough life because, you know, for one, they were away from their loved ones for a long, long, long periods of time. So I think we can, you know, scratch the stereotypical ho-ho-ho kind of pirate life. But there was an etiquette I read in your book that they have to sign and they pledge an oath and sign a declaration that they'll agree to abide by democracy. So talk to us a little bit about the standards they set for pirates on board.
Yes, they had to sign articles, which were the rules of the ship. And they many men couldn't write their names, so they put an X by their name. But that is their commitment to the brotherhood on the ship, that they will abide by the rules. And the rules were very, very specific. You know, no drinking. If they were caught drinking or stealing, then they wouldn't get their share of the take. There was a health insurance. There was a life insurance. There was a retirement program. Every member of the crew got an equal vote, which is one of the reasons that some men turned to piracy, because they were not treated the same way on merchant vessels. So the men were a brotherhood. There was a brotherhood among thieves. And if a pirate died in action, his share of the take was smuggled halfway around the world and delivered to his family. And there was a real connection that they had among each other. So the pirate world on the wooden world of a pirate ship had its benefits.
Yeah. Are you right in the book that sometimes they would even take care of other pirates' families in their own wills, which kind of illustrated that brotherhood, if you will?
Right.
Yeah. Why do you think we have this fascination with pirates? Because I told somebody, he asked, what are you reading, you know, working on for next week? And I'm like, The Pirate's Wife, and just briefly. And he's like, oh, I got to go get that. There seems to be this fascination. And I mean, I why do you think we have this fascination?
Well, it's a mythology that's been kept alive for 300 years. I think because it's so able to be creative. You know, it's on stage, it's in books, it's in movies. There's songs. It has good paraphernalia that has been created around it—a pet parrot and a wooden leg.
Find up the eye patch and the hook.
So it's you know, you can have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. So let's talk about research, because I'm sure as a historian and a journalist and an author, you had a lot of fun with your research, because we nerdy types like research.
Yeah.
So extensive research, and you have extensive notes at the back of the book to say where all of this information came from. I mean, given the fact that you already, you know, had done a dissertation and written another book on Pirates Wise, what in your research here surprised you the most?
I think what surprised me the most was Sarah's tenacity. I could follow her trail through her long life because she did live so long, till the age of 74, and because she had four husbands. And I could see the trajectory of her life. She started out as a very well-to-do young girl when she arrived in New York. She married wealthy, and she had these highs and lows in her life that I just think that it would have stopped most people in their tracks. Mm-hmm. So what surprised me was just her ability to pick herself up again. It was just, as I said, that indomitable spirit of hers.
Right, right. And so you were in the archives a lot, obviously, and you found, you managed to identify her grave, which was unmarked?
Yes, because it's over 300 years old. Mm-hmm. But right next to it, her son, by her fourth marriage, died 4 months after Sarah, and his grave is right next to her, and he's buried with his 10-month-old son. And from researching and interviewing, I believe that Sarah is buried right next to him because Trinity Church on Wall Street in Manhattan was her church. Captain Kidd helped build it. He loaned his block and tackle to lift the heavy stones. So he was invested in it personally to construct it because Sarah was very, very religious. And he rented a pew for her peaceful prayer service. And she was in pew number 4. And that was where, even after he died, she continued to be a active part of that church, and her family continued until 1800 to use the church. So there would be no question that of any place in Manhattan that is where Sarah is.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And you know, it's really funny because until I read your book, I didn't ever think or see New York as a pirate kind of town. Kind of more the Massachusetts area is where I would have pictured that kind of thing happening. But it was very much, it did very much reap the benefits of the pirates' bounty, right?
Yes, especially during one of the colonial governors, Benjamin Fletcher. And at the time of Benjamin Fletcher's tenure as governor, England was at war with France, and the economy was doing very poorly. And he saw the pirates' activity as a benefit to be a boon to the colony, to New York. So he allowed the pirates to come in without any punishment and bring in all their stolen loot. And the stolen loot could be sold at rock bottom prices to the merchants because pirates didn't have any overhead. So selling their loot to the local merchants just hugely benefited the colony because it spurred the economy. And it also was great for the colonists because they got these exotic goods that had come from halfway around the world. And they could enjoy some things that they couldn't enjoy otherwise. Mm. And also the pirates brought in coins. They brought in gold and silver coins. And there was a shortage of that because the authorities in London had enacted these trade acts called the Navigation Acts, which restricted trade on the merchants. And it meant that the merchants had to send all their goods first to London and or any place in England where it was going to be shipped. So it had to go all the way across the Atlantic to London or to England first, and then to the destination in the other part of the world. And that not only took an enormous amount of time, and it was very risky because sea voyages were dangerous, but it was extremely costly. So the colonists were looking for a way to shortcut these trade rules to make a living.
Yeah.
And the pirates made it happen.
Yeah, fascinating. You know, when I was poking around on Google after reading the book, I saw this article that was written in 2018, updated in 2021, in the New York Times. And it said that, we think of pirates and punishment and walking the plank and bread and water for punishment and all that kind of stuff. And it said that the U.S. Navy stopped allowing officers to punish sailors by limiting their meals to bread and water in 2019.
Oh, my gosh.
It said the Royal Navy in Britain stopped using that in 1891, but they weren't really aware that it was still going on here until there was a ship that even the taxi drivers knew had earned the name USS Bread and Water, and it was brought to the higher authorities in the Navy, and the law was changed in 2019 because that captain used it a lot. So the book is narrative nonfiction, and there's definitely an art to writing good narrative nonfiction, and this is excellent. So what did you keep top of mind as you approached the writing of the story from an author's point of view?
I was just trying to keep all my facts together.
I bet.
How I went about writing this book is I researched it for 3 years, and then I made a timeline and put every relevant fact on the timeline, and then broke it into chapters, and then went and wrote each chapter. And then many times within a chapter, I needed more research, so I had to go back and fill it in. But just by the timeline, I was able to really get a feel for the arc of her life. And, she kind of made it easy for me. She was just such a fascinating woman, and I didn't have to stretch too far because there was just so much rich texture to her life. And keeping her life in order and all the people that she touched and who knew her, it just made for a very rich narrative.
Yeah, well, it makes for a very fascinating read, and I think Sarah would be pleased with what you've done for her here.
Oh, thank you. Well, it's a coincidence because when I signed my contract with my publisher, Hanover Square Press, and they're an imprint of HarperCollins, the HarperCollins building in Manhattan is 3 blocks from Sarah's house.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So I like to believe that Sarah picked my publisher for me.
Yes. She's like, this is the person I want writing it, and this is the publisher.
That's right. It's all in my neighborhood.
Well, that's awesome. The book is The Pirate's Wife, The Remarkable True Story of Sarah Kidd. And I know listeners can find out much more about you, Daphne, at your website, which is your full name, DaphnePalmerGiannakopoulos.com. Final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Oh, I just hope that they enjoy reading it as much as I enjoyed telling it. It was truly a labor of love to bring a woman into the light after she had been in the shadows of her husband for 300 years. And I think that she is very much a woman of our times who, as a mother and a wife, she was a businesswoman. She has a lot that can be relevant to us today.
I can tell how much you loved this subject, and I'm looking forward to whatever you do next. Daphne Palmer Giannakopoulos, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much, Vicki. I hope our paths cross in the future.
Yes, me too. If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, I'm Carson Kressley. Of all the resources in the world, kindness is the most precious. For more than 140 years, American Humane has been working to protect animals in disasters, on farms, on the silver screen, and in zoos and aquariums caring for the world's vanishing creatures. You can help too by making humane choices every day. Visit AmericanHumane.org for simple ways to build a more caring and compassionate world for all of us.